that that arrived here several months ago have not been able to go home because of the lack of transportation.
Bering Sea Islanders push for better flight service. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, the 20th of October. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, speaking out at the Elders and Youth Conference.
When you see Alaska statistics of domestic violence or abuse, you can put mine and Matt's faces to those statistics and those numbers.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by BP, teaming up with Alaskans since statehood and together looking toward a bright future.
State Representative Jay Ramris announced today that he's running for the job of Lieutenant Governor. The three-term Republican from Fairbanks says Alaska must reshape policies for sound growth using the resource-based economy. Ramris owns Pike's Waterfront Lodge, Pike's Landing, and the Food Factory Restaurant in Fairbanks. He currently serves as the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee and the House Special Committee on Economic Development, Trade, and Tourism. State House Representative Harry Crawford has raised $18,700 for his bid to unseat Congressman Don Young. Crawford announced in August he's running for Alaska's sole U.S. House seat in 2010 and is the only Democrat to so far throw his name into the running. Crawford filed his first campaign fundraising numbers last week, which counts money raised and spent through the end of September. Of the $18,700 Crawford raised, he spent more than $2,000. His opponent, Congressman Young, has $123,000 on hand, but that's far less than he's typically had in past election cycles. During the last campaign, Young had amassed about $1.5 million at this point in the race. Yesterday, the 2009 Elders and Youth Conference got underway at the Dena'ina Convention Center in Anchorage. The first day was busy with an Alaska Native Youth Film Festival, nearly 20 afternoon workshops on a wide range of topics from leadership and cultural identity to advice from elders and picking a college. A keynote address by a young man living with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder revealed the lifelong struggle this devastating disorder inflicts. APRN intern Tika Ballas has the story.
This year's theme is Generations of Wisdom, Generations of Strength. One of the three keynote speakers was 17-year-old Morgan Fawcett, a Tlingit native from Juneau. Fawcett now lives in the lower 48, but what he came to speak about is something that affects a large percentage of people born in Alaska.
When I was born an alcoholic, I have not drank myself, nor have I smoked or ever done any other drug. In my own life, I struggle with a lot of problems. Those that affect my body, and those that affect my brain.
Fawcett is talking about alcohol-related birth defects known as FASD, fetal alcohol spectrum disorders. Alaska has the highest known incidence of FASD in the nation. At 14, Fawcett said he'd experienced everything from social ridicule to familial hardships and decided he had to do something about it. That's when he started One Heart Creations, a nonprofit for FASD awareness.
Because not only do I have addictive behaviors, but I have frontal lobe damage, which is also a very important part of the brain that controls the executive functions. These do not allow me, because of the damage, I have poor memory. This affects every bit of my life.
Having FASD does not slow Fawcett down nor stymie his motivation. He is also a recording artist of Native flute music.
And then my grandmother and my grandfather had a place for me in Oregon, and we were allowed to stay with them. This move, combined with exposure to the Native American flute, saved me.
Fawcett and his grandmother travel all over the country together, speaking to those who are affected by FASD. Their travels are primarily funded by his CD sales and whatever donations they can muster.
I'm here to say, as the youth, it is your turn to hold each other up, and fix the mistakes for which we have caused upon ourselves. As the youth, as the leaders, our communities, We must learn to hold each other up once again.
Fossen's presentation yesterday was received by a full house, and his candid words of advice and support were accepted with a standing ovation. In Anchorage, this is Tika Ballas.
Drug and alcohol addiction also contribute to other forms of abuse. One long-running program has helped many Alaska families deal with the devastating consequences of domestic violence and sexual abuse. The Family Wellness Warriors Initiative encourages survivors to share their stories. The program was started by the South Central Foundation 10 years ago and has trained more than 2,000 people in its steps and philosophy. Speaking at the Elders and Youth Conference today, Family Wellness Warriors Initiative Supervisor of Outreach Esther Stevens says the program seeks to stop destructive cycles.
Domestic violence and child sexual abuse and child neglect does not have to occur in the state of Alaska, and our program is working toward ending it in this generation and not waiting until the next generation. We're trying to end it now.
Stevens is herself a survivor of abuse, and she and her husband, Matt Stevens, spoke before hundreds of people at today's gathering at the Dena'ina Center.
When you see Alaska statistics of domestic violence or abuse, you can put mine and Matt's faces to those statistics and those numbers. Those aren't just numbers to us. We are the face of those statistics. A lot of the youth and a lot of the elders are the face of those statistics that you see. That is why I have so much passion for this program.
Esther Stevens is Aleut and Filipino, and Matt Stevens is Gwich'in Athabascan from Fort Yukon. He also works for the program and says sharing his story of surviving abuse was so hard because it was contrary to what he'd taught.
I was told over and over how weak it was to let anything affect the way I think or act, that to talk about it was wrong, and that being a man was to hold back everything inside me that made me feel sad or depressed or hopeless. And I carried that idea for most of my life.
Matt Stevens says he now takes pride in talking about his past, especially at events like today's conference where people can approach him afterward. The Family Wellness Warriors Initiative is faith-based and non-denominational. Matt Stevens says it uses spirituality to carry its message.
I never feel like they're trying to push me towards anything, you know, towards some kind of being saved in a certain way or something like that. But they do tell you the importance of spirituality. You know, that's a big part of everyday life, you know, especially as Native people and how spiritual we are. My grandma is a very spiritual person, so it came naturally.
Matt and Esther Stevens are in their late 20s and say they are especially eager to share their story with young people and the elders of Alaska.
I wanted more elders in there just because they lead, you know, they lead in our culture and they lead our generation. And so if they're the ones hearing it and they're the ones that want to make the change, then our other generations will follow them. I followed my mother.
Over 60% of the program's participants are Alaska Native or American Indian, but anyone, including healthcare providers, can participate. The program's organizers say it was recently selected by an Aboriginal health organization in Canada as a national model. The Elders and Youth Conference wraps up today. The Alaska Federation of Natives Conference begins Thursday and runs through Saturday. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, new help for Yupik parents.
This was very enriching. It was very wonderful work for me.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender. And by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
Best Beginnings Alaska has just released three new early childhood development guides in Yupik. The goal is to provide Yupik-speaking parents of very young children with books in their own language and containing culturally relevant activities. As part of our continuing series on Alaska Native education, KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
The project stems from a State Department of Education and Early Childhood Development list of over 160 early learning activities parents can do at home with their young children. Best Beginnings Alaska's executive director, Abby Hensley, says although the state guide is a valuable resource, it faces a key difficulty.
It's not real accessible for a lot of people, particularly parents who don't have a lot of time to delve into things like this.
Best Beginnings is a public-private partnership created to help children develop learning basics by the time they enter school. The group's core premise is that the most important teachers for children from birth through 6 years of age are parents and other adult family members. Too often, they don't realize how important the simple games and activities they play are to the child's early learning development. A year ago, Best Beginnings released 3 activity books in Spanish, the most prevalent language next to English spoken in Alaska. The books were divided according to age, with activities selected from the state list that Spanish speakers found culturally relevant. Pictures were chosen according to the same criteria. In May, Best Beginnings issued an English edition. And now, this fall, the first Alaska Native language books have appeared.
These that are in Yupik, we produced really in the same way. We brought together a group of Yupik and Yupik-speaking early childhood professionals to say, look at these 165 activities that go back to these early learning guidelines, 165 activities, and help us figure out which ones we should put in a book for Yupik speakers.
Marie Mead translated the selected activities into Yupik.
This was very enriching. It was very wonderful work for me.
Mead says although she considered the work an honor, it was also challenging, especially when it came to translating background explanations.
Words like motor development and all the words that the English language uses. And so I had to look at that and think about it in Yupik. And so I translated it so that it makes sense in Yupik.
Barbara Brown helped guide the overall translation effort. She says the Yupik group went beyond culling from the state list and created 26 additional activities, although not all made it into the 3 books.
The activities that were included were making dance fans. There's a long activity in the preschool book that involves the story of the loon's necklace. We had activities like preparing fish. The concept of the books is that you take what exists in a child's life and you figure out how to add extra engagement to it, extra meaning, extra learning from it.
Hensley said when she recently showed the various translations to Inupiaq speakers in Barrow, the cultural relevancy of the Yupik edition was especially appealing. That was despite the language barrier. Hensley says Best Beginnings hopes to issue another series of Alaska Native childhood development activities that will in part overcome language divisions.
We're thinking now perhaps of making some laminated cards that would have Yupik on one side and English on the other side, so that it would have the activities, but still be accessible to both Yupik speakers and those for whom Yupik was not their first language.
Copies of the 3 activity guides in Yupik are available free by contacting the Best Beginnings Alaska office in Anchorage or by going to the group's website. This is Len Anderson in Anchorage.
More Native education stories, pictures, and links are at our website, aprn.org. A Fairbanks program that helps homeless teens is back on its feet after receiving federal support. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The Fairbanks Counseling and Adoption-operated Youth Street Outreach Program has been hanging on by a thread, but coordinator Sarah Fennell says things have turned around due to a grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
A year ago, we were operating on about $17,000 budget, which was entirely donations. There was a little bit that we got through a grant through United Way for our summer program, and that was only a few $1,000s. So now we have a $100,000 budget per year. We've got 3 years of funding, and things are looking really good.
The program previously lost its federal funding in the very competitive national grant cycle, and Fennell says it likely won it back by proving it can operate on its own. She says demonstrating sustainability is important, but a lot more can be offered with grant support.
We're going to be hiring two more individuals to do outreach and case management for youth. We're going to be hiring two peer outreach worker positions for youth who have moved towards stability, who have been involved in our program in the past and who want to help other youth. We're renting a drop-in center space downtown on 7th Avenue, and that will have a computer lab in it for youth to come in and use for resume writing, job applications, and we'll also have a kitchen in there where we can cook meals, we can serve meals to the youth.
Fennell says the facilities and staffing ensure there will be resources regularly available. She says the Youth Street Outreach Program still needs local donations to provide a 10% match required for the federal grant, as well as to send a message of community support.
The teens need to know that people care. That's the most important thing to build up their self-esteem.
Fennell says the program sees 10 to 30 youth in crisis on a weekly basis. She says all the kids have unique circumstances, but many end up in the program due to the effects of alcohol or substance abuse, either personally or in their family. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. And by the Lake Otis Pharmacy, prescriptions, support hose, medical equipment, and a full selection of satellites in Alaska. The Lake Otis Pharmacy on Lake Otis, one block north of Tudor, with the wheelchair on the sign.
Alaska's aviation industry took a major hit from the recession. Anchorage is the United States' number one cargo airport, with Fairbanks playing a key backup role. State Deputy Commissioner of Aviation Christine Klein says the Alaska system was impacted early on as the worldwide economic slowdown slashed cargo shipments.
We were actually seeing these downturns back in May and June of last year, about 6 months before some of the other airports in the country.
Klein says the situation was made worse by eruptions of Mount Redoubt last spring that forced some cargo carriers to reroute flights out of the state. She said cargo landings were down about 23% during fiscal year 09. The number of passenger flights was flat. Klein says there have been major cash flow problems for the industry.
What that basically resulted in is a $22 million earned revenue deficit for our system that our airport managers and myself and the rest of the team had to find a way to balance. And they did that. We had a hiring freeze for the past year and a half. We slowed down many capital projects. We've had fewer contracts. And we had some layoffs in Anchorage.
Klein says recent fuel sales data from Anchorage and Fairbanks airports indicates business is beginning to recover.
For the last 3 months, we've been at 57 million gallons a month for our system, and that is an increase over the past 16 months. So things are looking better. We've hit bottom, we're at flat, and now we're climbing out. So that's the good news.
Klein says three new Chinese cargo carriers and a new passenger airline recently began flying to Alaska. She shared data from a new assessment of the aviation industry's economic contribution to the state. Klein says aviation is Alaska's fifth largest industry, accounts for 10% of jobs in the state and $3.5 billion of the $42 billion gross state product. She says those numbers are much higher than they are in other states, a fact that should help Alaska garner federal funding for the state's 258 airports. The Bering Sea community of Little Diomede has been without passenger air service for more than 3 months, stranding people and taxing patients on both the island and the mainland. KNOM's Paul Korchin has more.
Norton Sound Health Corporation is responsible for the wellness of Diomeders, and its board of directors recently decided enough is enough.
They drafted a resolution to declare that it be considered to be a disaster area due to the lack of transportation and the lack of access to health care. And I know that Kawarik is also very much involved in advocating for the community as well. They've written a couple of really good letters alongside us.
NSHC Chief Administrative Officer Roy Ogloin says the resolution is aimed at both state and federal officials. They're also urging Evergreen helicopters to restore service as soon as possible. Evergreen's twin-engine BO-105 copter has been down for maintenance, and the company has since relied on a single-engine AS-350 A-Star to fulfill its Diomede mail contract. but transporting passengers over water requires two engines.
That has had a tremendous impact on the community as far as being able to get not only basic passenger service back and forth, but also, you know, trying to get people into Nome for appointments. We have, for instance, several expectant mothers who have not been able to come in to make their appointments in Nome just because of the lack of transportation. Even getting prescription medications out to the island has been problematic.
Many Diameters have been unable to keep their medical appointments. Ogloin says technology can compensate for that, but only to a point.
Telemedicine is always an option. I think sometimes the connection to Little Diomede and certainly the connection to all of our communities through the internet or through the telephone can be really difficult at times. And it's spotty and not always reliable. We're able to do some things, but there's no replacement for actual face-to-face appointments.
Diomede City Clerk Jamie Akinga indicates such logistical hurdles have taken a toll on her community's welfare.
There are people needing to get off of the island, especially the health aides. They need to leave for training. It's really important that we get our health aides off for training because we're on an island with 114 people, and they're the heart of our community. They're the lifesavers and the healers. Lots of reasons why we need passenger service, because we're so remote. Our representatives don't make it out to go to meetings to voice our concerns, our needs.
Akinga says Diameters are frustrated by the ongoing lack of air service. Small planes land on a frozen runway during winter, but when the ice is out, the copters become the only alternative. Ogloin notes it's not just on the island that Diameters are getting stranded.
And then we also have the problem of once people get here, or people that that arrived here several months ago have not been able to go home because of the lack of transportation. We've had a couple of people fly to Wales and then get on a boat in Wales, a personal boat, and then make it to Diomede. But if there is any kind of wave activity, you pretty much can't land a boat on the shore there because of the rocks.
Akinga indicates her community is weary of being viewed as a mere curiosity by the people in power.
It's unfortunate for Diomede to be so highly spoken of because we're sitting 2.5 miles in front of Big Diomede, Russia, and that we can see tomorrow. And we get all that publicity, but we don't get help as promptly as we need. We have the governor talking about, yeah, we can see Russia from the U.S., the former governor. She's never been here.
Some folks think it makes no sense to live on a remote Bering Sea island in this day and age. Akinga has something to say to them.
I would ask them to come spend a month here and see exactly how we live and how we've grown so adapted to our lifestyle that living on an island is most important because it is extremely dry. There is no alcohol. It's very hard to get drugs here. It's a better place for children to grow. There's subsistence. The gathering and the hunting, especially the blue king crab. I hear it's the best crab anywhere. It's just a very unique place to live.
Evergreen executives at both the company's Anchorage office and world headquarters in Oregon repeatedly have refused to comment about their diminished Diomede service. NSHC president and CEO Carol Piscoya says she's drafting a letter directly to the company urging a resumption of passenger service. In Nome, I'm Paul Korchin.
Air North will offer 3 round-trip flights between Juneau and Whitehorse next year if the two cities guarantee a passenger load. Juneau Mayor Bruce Botello and Whitehorse Mayor Bev Buckway have worked out an agreement with the Canadian airline. The Juneau Assembly has even pledged funds to get the planes off the ground. KTOO's Rosemary Alexander has more.
Whitehorse Mayor Bev Buckway says her constituents are ready to fly to Juneau. Air North halted service between the two cities several years ago, but the two mayors say there's enough interest to try it again.
When something's always taken away, then that's when you hear the complaints, isn't it? We've got so many activities on the go here, you know, weekend after weekend, as you do. By trying to get a little more enthusiasm going during the winter months, it boosts the economy for everybody on both sides. There's no end to what we can do. We just have to get back and forth.
Juneau Mayor Bruce Botello and Buckway took the idea to Air North President Joe Sparling. He says the company discontinued Whitehorse Juneau flights due to a lack of traffic. But Sparling says the company will fly a 40-passenger turboprop aircraft 3 weekends this winter if the cities will share in the risk.
As far as we're concerned, we were just looking for a commitment to make sure enough seats are sold that we can operate the flights. And that sounds like from Juneau's end, there's been a commitment made. Whitehorse is looking at it as well, and it will take their buy-in to put the thing together.
To make sure it happens, the Juneau Assembly voted Monday to guarantee Air North up to $8,800 U.S. for each round trip. Buckway says the Yukon Territory Departments of Tourism and Economic Development are likely to guarantee her city's participation. Botello says the cost to each government will depend on the passenger load.
If the flights are full, and that's, of course, the effort that community groups in both Whitehorse and Juneau will work toward, there will be no out-of-pocket from the taxpayers of either community. It will be fully covered. We're simply making sure that there's a backup to encourage Air North to take the step of retesting the waters in terms of air traffic between the two communities.
The two mayors have been discussing the idea with each town's visitor industry, arts community, and ski areas. They're the ones who will have to fill the seats. Eagle Crest General Manager Kirk Duncan says he doesn't think that will be a problem.
We've been working with Mount Sema and have a reciprocal season pass deal with those folks. It's also interesting because we think of downhill skiing, but Whitehorse has just an outstanding Nordic program as well. So, you know, we don't think it's going to be a very difficult proposition to fill 40 seats.
Agreed, says Juneau Arts Council Board President Andrew Hemingway.
One of the nice things about Juneau is that it offers a tremendous assortment of cultural activities and artistic events year-round. And anything that would provide additional audience for some of those events that occur during the winter is a good thing, we think, for the arts community in town.
The two communities have selected the first weekend of December. In Juneau, that would offer performances of the popular Nutcracker Ballet, among other arts events, and pre-holiday shopping. A weekend in February has been selected to coincide with the start of the Yukon Quest sled dog race. The third weekend would be Alaska Folk Festival. Sperling says Air North needs the Whitehorse commitment before marketing the flights, and each community will have to do its share of marketing. Both mayors say the long-term goal is a return to regular air service between Juneau and Whitehorse. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
The key witness in the federal government's corruption cases against several Alaska politicians is seeking a delay in his sentencing. Bill Allen, the former chief executive of oilfield services company VECO, today sought the delay to February 28th. He was originally scheduled to be sentenced October 28th. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Jenny Canfield and Len Anderson in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Paul Korchin in Nome, and Rosemarie Alexander in Juneau. APRN's Libby Casey and Tika Ballas reported from Anchorage. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron, and I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alaska Business Monthly, giving voice to Alaska business.
If heating your home costs more than you can manage and you have a low income, the state of Alaska has heating assistance programs that may help. The programs have expanded to include families with a higher household income. For information or an application form, call 1-800-470-3058 or visit heatinghelp.alaska.gov. Sometimes a little help makes all the difference. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. Elks National Foundation, in conjunction with the Alaska State Elks Association and local lodges, is offering the Most Valuable Student MVS Scholarship for high school seniors. These scholarships are awarded to graduating high school seniors through a local, state, and national competition and are based on scholarship, leadership, and financial need. Information and applications at elks.org/ENF. Application deadline is November 2nd. This message sponsored by the Alaska Elks Association.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.